Hello, everyone. Welcome to a bonus episode of The One Inch Barrier. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ojano. Again, I hope you're all staying safe and staying healthy. And to those not yet vaccinated, I hope you can still stay home. Oh, we're still not vaccinated. All right. So this episode is part of the 2018 retrospective, where we talk about the films that were nominated alongside Roma, the winner of Best Foreign Language Film in 2018. So this is the third episode of this retrospective. This is available in full on Patreon, so I hope you can check that out. So, this film that we're talking about was Japan's official submission for Best Foreign Language Film at the 91st Academy Awards. We are talking about, of course, Shoplifters, or in its original language, Manbiki Kazoku, written, edited, and directed by Hirokazu Koreeda. So for a quick summary, this is about a family of an impoverished family, but non-biological family that live together, and the family tries to make ends meet by small-time shoplifting, where the family includes Osamu and Nobuyo as the mother and father, and then Aki as this kind of sister. Shota is the kid that they have trained to be a shoplifter. Hatsue is the grandmother in the family. So they live together. And then one cold night, they see a young girl that is abandoned outside of their house. So they take her in. And they realize that the kid is living in an abusive house. So they decided to keep the kid. And the kid's name is Yuri. So our guest for this episode is from the Philippines. You've already heard her in the 1990 episode where we talk about Journey of Hope and the films of 1990. I really love that episode. In the third season, she's a film editor and a short filmmaker. I am so happy to have her back. Please welcome Che Tagyamon. Hi, Che. Thank you for coming back.
Hi. Thanks for having me again.
Yay. Again, I'm so happy to have you here. And, you know, the last time we spoke was literally recording the 1990 episode. And I mentioned this off the record before we started recording it. I really love that episode. You really shared some personal stuff that I didn't expect because I didn't make the connection when I gave you that year. And you've been really open in that episode. And thank you for coming back and feeling like this is a safe space.
I think it's like therapy to me.
Well, I'm happy that, you know, we help each other out in these processing emotions through films and talking about them. All right. So, Shoplifters. I don't know. I don't know your relationship with this film. Have you seen it before? And if yes, what is your relationship with this film? And has anything changed in this rewatch?
Yeah, I first watched it in a Q Cinema screening here in the Philippines when it was shown. It already won Cannes back then, but it had a special screening here in the Philippines for Q Cinema. So I got to watch it on a big screen. And I remember that I loved it before. So now rewatching it, the first one is an emotional watch, and the second time that I watched it, it is more like watching from like how the filmmaker did this and did that. Yeah, and I've been a long time Koreeda fan from college, so yeah, I'm happy that you gave this to me.
I didn't know that, or probably that's my failure as a friend that I did not know that. But what is your favorite Koreeda?
It's Nobody Knows, because I got converted to being his fan because of that film.
Nobody Knows, this is the one where they were abandoned by their parents. So the younger big brother is I haven't seen it yet. I know a friend of ours made me want to watch it for her short film.
And who's that?
On her thesis film. And as a true friend, I didn't watch it. But I've heard really wonderful things about Nobody Knows. My way into Koreeda was, I think, like Father, Like Son.
Mm.
which I thought
was a great film too.
Yeah, I thought that was so sensitively done, and the concept that took me by surprise, because the concept was ripe of melodrama, and yet it became this very careful study of all parties involved. And there is so much empathy in it. And I think we also get to see that empathy here in Shoplifters.
I
don't know how to approach this one with you, especially you being a Kore-eda fan. Where do you think this place, what do you think now of this film? And how do you think it holds up in his filmography?
Yeah, I think when it comes to like his filmography, this did great. But you know, with Cannes and all the big festivals, it's like they don't always award the best films in the roster. Most of the time, it's like a culmination of the director's films. Like I think they award the Darden brothers because they award the Darden brothers not because the film is for that year is their best work, but because of their long history of producing these great films, and it's just a combination of luck and politics and the greatest of the film. So I think this is what happens with Shoplifters. I think some of his previous works are better than this, but it's still a great film nonetheless. What's your other question again?
What do you think of the film this time?
Yeah. I think, like what you said, he has this talent of empathizing well with its characters and not judging them. And yeah, his humanist approach to his films, I've read that he kind of got it because of his documentary background. And that really helped a lot.
I did not know that he had a background. Which I think reflects now on how there is respect that I see and how it's not necessarily that the characters were just being respectful, but the respect that the film has on these characters and how they were captured in their lives. Because I think when a filmmaker is detached from a situation like this, you can make a film that's, you know, it can be the same story, but then it can be condescending to the subject matter. When you see that the director is on an ivory tower operating as if that person is an outsider.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But this one, it's so sensitively observed. Like I said, I think it's a Kore-eda thing at this point, that he is just so sensitive in handling these stories that he has. Speaking like with two film scenes. and there is restraint. I think it's a very understated drama, which again, it's like a concept that's ripe of melodrama, you know, a kid that they take in and then people are looking for that kid. Like, yeah, this, it can be turned into this sensationalistic melodrama, but I find that the film is not interested in that. It's more interested in observing. It's almost like a study in the behavior of these characters. Yeah, which I found extremely fascinating. And I know not everyone, especially when a person, no judgments, but if a person is probably more inclined to the more plot-driven cinema that we are more used coming in from, not necessarily just Western, but from America specifically, their cinema is very plot-driven, very structure-driven. With this one, it's really sitting with the characters, observing their behavior, and he has an eye. Kore-eda has this eye for capturing what needs to be captured in that moment. You know, it can have this big, this film doesn't have big scenes, this scene, but then he knows how to trickle it down, which position of the camera should be in it right now, what's the priority for us to see. I'm really impressed. I mean, I know it's not a film that's calling to be impressive, but but it is impressive on how nuanced it is in terms of writing, in terms especially the filmmaking. I am really in awe of how in touch Kore-eda is with this story.
Yeah, you're right. I think
I know,
that
right?
Yeah, you're right that when you read the blurbs or the loglines of his films, it's mostly like from the outsider's point of view. If you don't know who he is as a filmmaker, you're gonna be like, what? This is like a plot of a normal Filipino teleserye. Oh, what do you call teleserye? Filipino soap opera. Yeah. Like this one. You are right when you said that he's very observant. And he's like, he's interested in capturing those intimate moments and like small gestures that most filmmakers tend to overlook. Like, or most filmmakers tend to like focus more on other things. But him, he is very, his films are very character driven. And yeah, but character driven, but also very socially conscious, I think. But more.
Yeah. By the way, I forgot. The Manbiki Kazoku actually translates literally to not just shoplifters, but shoplifting family.
Yeah.
You just have to write it out. Point of view. I think that's really important in his films, especially in this one, because it's, I don't know if it's an omniscient. No, I don't think it's omniscient because I don't think the perspective is detached from the characters, but I also think it's at arm's length for a purpose because it's not judging of the characters. I mean, I am impressed on how, for example, the first scene, you know, when we see the models of Randy, the shoplifting, on how careful it was done in terms of how the scenes came together, on how blocking really helped in establishing how intricate and yet how simple it could be done. How matter of fact it was. You know, it was the shoplifting per se wasn't a spectacle.
Yeah.
For this one, which I think in the context of the film makes us even understand or at least empathize or get where they're coming from, because the point isn't really to just shoplift. The point was to survive. And I think these characters were doing their best with what they're given. You know, they're not merely shoplifters, they have day jobs, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
And the fact that the act of shoplifting isn't treated as this, I mean, it's nerve-wracking at times, but it's not this big exciting moment per se the way that others might hype it up. I think it goes to show it's a gesture of respect that we've been saying a while ago about this filmmaker and the film that this contains, this scene is in, to show that the film tries to understand the characters and actually understands the characters and not really something that, you know, we see films that are about the poor and yet you can feel it. I think you know it when you see it, when the perspective is so detached. Or when there is grandiosity in like, oh, this poverty, you know? I am in awe of this because, you know, we have seen those films and they feel bad. At a certain point, you feel like, ugh, why did I watch that? Not because of we've seen poverty, but like, it's almost as if the film took advantage of its characters. But with this one, there is empathy. And it's reflected on how scenes are done.
Yeah. You were right when you said that the first scene is so carefully crafted in a way that it is not that grandiose. You see, when with films like that, the first, most of the time, the tendency is to like set it up as a like thriller kind of shoplifting. What's that? And with Kore-eda, he managed to do it or show it like a ritual, even with putting something as nuanced as the
hand gesture,
the hand gestures of the child before. before performing a task as mundane as shoplifting.
Yeah, I remember now, you know, when you're speaking about that, the mundanity of it and how the scene didn't feel manipulative. I think it's because even in the shoplifting, we're focusing on the human side of it and not on the actual act of shoplifting per se. I mean, of course, we see the shoplifting, but we see them as humans doing it rather than focusing on the act itself. If it makes any sense. I mean, I could imagine a filmmaker focusing on the act more, like more close-ups of the stealing, more frantic editing, more, just more.
Yeah.
To show like a big attention-grabbing opening, it could be. It could have done that. But with this one, like I said, it's very matter of fact. And then you understand more the characters and the perspective of the film because it's a matter of fact. And I think it goes back to where the filmmaker is coming from. Because you have to be sensitive in those, like, on how your motivations translate. Like, you know, we can have reasons to make a film. Like, oh, I want to make a film because I want to shed a light on this. But then the material doesn't show it because you're sending mixed messages. There is a certain kind of intelligence, I guess, that you should manage to translate your motivation through the cinematic language of your film.
Yeah.
And in a small scene like that, I guess, it's demonstrative of how Corrietta is very careful in making sure that we're not misunderstanding the characters and him at the same time. And I think... sorry. And I think, you know what? It goes back to blocking and framing. I remember the first time they took in the girl, Yuri, and it's a dinner scene. So, a lot of people involved. You see, like, less close-ups, I guess. More of, like, from afar and they kind of zoomed in. I can't describe it. I'm not good at cinematography. I'm sorry. But, you see, it's almost as if the blocking is so deliberate. So you see, okay, this is what's happening with the kid and the mother and the granddaughter and the sister and the father, you know? And then the kid, the Yuri, is standing there. And you see the directions of where relationship is, how it's playing within the scene. And yet, it's not just that. But for example, Nobuyo, the mother, is sitting away from the family.
Yeah.
So she only has a few lines. But the film makes a point to show her when she notices something. It would cut away to a reaction shot. That's still far. But when she's being observant, we are getting to know a character without necessarily focusing just on that character. We are getting to know her with how she was, her in respect or in relation to what's happening in the foreground, I guess. Foreground. And it's all captured in one take. So then for us, there's no break of like flow. Like, all right, we're seeing wide shots from here and there. So you can take it for granted. But then it's what we see in the exact moment. When they're trying to talk to the kid, why do we go to Nobuyo? Because she's also seeing something. And that sensitivity on like where to focus in a scene, I think that's something that must be studied because it informs us like where do you point the camera at this exact moment? Like, you know, when two people are talking, sometimes the most important part of the discussion isn't with those two. But with the third person that's reacting
to
it. I don't know. It's really careful direction and I'm jealous.
Yeah, his setup of scenes is so balanced. Like, it is character driven, but with shoplifters, because he's working with the non-sum, he has to balance all the, like, the dynamics of the group and the scenes they are in. Like, for that scene, it's the first time that we got introduced to the family as a whole, right? And it's a great setup too, because for the next scene, we will see Nobuyo react to the information she just got from that scene. Like, it's from the previous scene, it's the first time that we also, like, it is implied that the child is being hurt by her parents. And on the following scene, it's Nobuyo will act out, it's a decisive moment for Nobuyo to not return the child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. You're a good observer. I didn't make the connection, but yeah, it now makes sense that, you know, and when they tried to bring back the child, you know, Osamu was like, let's just leave her outside. Mm. You know, they will get her. Which is like, I don't know. I think we should, you know, there. And it's foreshadowed by how she was quietly responding in the scene. But she's not even the focus of that scene. The focus is on the kid and on how the people are responding to her. And the grandmother, Hatsue. Mm. I mean, Shota has this kind of like weird relationship with Yuri at first. Like, kind of like, I'm the only kid here. Like, what are you doing here? And then you also see like Osamu, the father, talking about it. And then the grandmother, Hatsue, is really talkative. And then Aki is really curious to see, like, because she is like a grandma's pet, but she's also curious with a kid. And the kid's really the focus. And even on the blocking level, it's Nobuyo is deliberately away.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a reason why she was deliberately away. Because she can observe from afar. And I think that really gives a lot of setup in the second scene. Like, oh, now it makes sense. Yeah. Like, light bulb moment. It makes sense that why she was the one to be like, I don't think we should return.
True.
Yeah. It's really careful, careful. And he wrote and directed it. So, you know, there is a unity.
Yeah.
And what's on the paper and what's on the screen. Because sometimes we're like, you feel, I don't know if you have those feelings, but sometimes we watch a film, which is good, but like, no, I would have put the camera somewhere else.
Yeah. There are certain films like that. No, I don't want to tell. Yeah, but you can see that
later. Yeah, tell me.
You can see that some. Oh, I'll tell you later.
Yeah, I mean, even in some like Oscar contending films, it would be like, I would be like, huh, I think extend the cut for 2 more seconds, or like, no, cut it faster, or like in terms of the camera, like, I don't think this is the best place to put it at this exact moment. But with Shoplifters, you know, it gets those things right. And what do you think of, because I think pretty much there is an even focus on the family members.
Mm.
Would you agree with that observation?
Yeah, I was, of course, I haven't got the time to like really count the time spent.
I didn't too, and that's fine.
The time spent for that, for each of the characters, I hope someone does that. But yeah,
I hope Screen Time Central does it, because Screen Time Central does screen time counts of unsung.
But yeah, emotional from watching it with no knowledge of their screen time. So I think it's fairly even. Yeah.
What do you think of that decision to have even focus?
I think it's great to have the characters have even screen times, because we see them as a unit, as a family, and not as family members interacting with each other. Yeah. Not as an individual.
Yeah. I don't know. I think screen time is like not necessarily the most great, most accurate, because it's not mathematical, but you know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Screen Time Central, courtesy of Matthew Stewart, did a screen time count.
Ooh.
Of the characters and their screen time. Osamu was in the film for 44.83%. And then Shota was in 42.43%. Nobuya was in 39.25%. Yuri, 29.97%. Aki was 18.24%. And Hatsue, the grandmother, was in 18.9%. So even if there are like three obvious, in terms of like screen time, ahead, Osamu, Nobuyo, and Shota, I think this is still pretty even.
Yeah, because like you said, it's not really mathematical. Sometimes, even if Hatsue died like at the 2/3 part of the film, you can still feel her.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Sorry. She died.
She dies. She dies, guys. Yeah, even if she dies on some, at some point of the film, she, her presence can still be felt on the ending parts and on the latter parts of the film.
Hey, what's up? Thank you for listening to this preview of this bonus episode. If you want to hear more, please head to patreon.com/theoneinchbarrier. For only $4 a month, not only do you have full access to bonus episodes, but you also get early access to regular episodes. Again, thank you so much. And together, let's break the 1-inch barrier.